It's time for Big Blue Kickoff Live. Only on Giants.com.
Manning back, steps up, heaves one down the middle of the field into the end zone, and Nix makes the catch for the touchdown. He went up with the big hands and caught it on the Hail Mary.
Boots one, returnable for Williams from his own 20. Lost the ball, and the Giants say they have it. They do. Devin Thomas recovered it, but the rookie Jaquan Williams punched it out.
Manning out of the shotgun set. He's back to throw. Finds the pocket. Deep ball down the left sideline, and it's going to be caught. Was he inbounds? Yes. Manningham on the sideline. Brady's under pressure. Brady's chased. Brady heaves one down the middle of the field into the end zone. A jump ball, and it's incomplete, and the ball game's over, and the Giants have won Super Bowl 46.
Now, here's your host, John Schmelk.
Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com. John Schmelk with you at 201-939-4513. Also, sending your questions on Twitter to hashtag GiantsChat. Big show with you today. We're joined by Ralph Valchiano of the Daily News. Has been the Giants beat reporter for quite a while. Also writes the Blue Screen blog for the Daily News. You can find him on Twitter as well. He'll be joining us in just a minute as Melroy gets him up on the line here. A lot of stuff to talk about. Sean Payton addressed the media at the owners' meetings down in Florida for the first time today. You're going to have some votes on some rule proposals over the next couple days at the owner meetings. Yesterday, the Redskins and the Cowboys basically announced that they're officially going to file grievances over their cap space being taken away because they dumped a lot of contract into that uncapped year back in 2010. So a lot of stuff going on around the NFL. The Bill Parcells rumors are out there in terms of whether or not he's going to be that interim replacement for Sean Payton in the 1 year that he's suspended at the Saints. Obviously, the NFL draft coming up as well. And anything Giants you guys want to talk about, we're here for you at 201-939-4513, 201-939-4513. You can also send in your questions on Twitter to hashtag GiantsChat. And any questions for Ralph Valchiano, who joins us now from the New York Daily News, you can send in those questions to hashtag GiantsChat as well. Ralph, long time no see, my friend. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
We're doing good. No big press conferences at the Timex Performance Center over the past week. The Giants have quietly gone about their business, which has really been a Jerry Reese staple in his offseason so far with his time with the Giants, huh?
Yeah, and, you know, in the past, it's gotten some Giants fans a little up in arms because it looks like he's doing nothing. You know, understandably, fans want action. You look at the free agent list and you think, I'd like this guy, and I want this guy. You know, how come the Redskins are getting this guy and we can't get him? But it's been proven over time that that's not the way to build a team. I don't think the Giants are the only example to that, but they're certainly one of the greatest examples of it. They did relatively nothing last offseason, and, gee, everything worked out pretty well in the end.
The Giants did get some good news yesterday, Ralph. They get awarded an additional draft pick for compensation on the balance of free agents they signed and free agents they lost. And a fourth-round pick can be a pretty valuable commodity.
Oh, absolutely. I'm actually a little surprised that they got one that high. I'm not going to pretend for you that I understand the comp pick formula. No one does.
No one does.
I've had GMs say to me over the years, I have no idea how they figure this, but whatever. But it is a high pick, and it's easy to sort of dismiss that sometimes. People look at the draft and they think, well, gee, now it's a third-day pick. But think of some of the great players the Giants have gotten in the fourth round and beyond. Their starting lineup really is kind of littered with guys like that. You know, Ahmad Bradshaw was a seventh rounder. You know, what was David Beal, a fourth or fifth rounder at one point? So these picks are important when you've got a good scouting department, and you know, the Giants have been terrific in that area in the last few years.
Now, I'm sure you watched some of it or at least saw some of the quotes. Your take on Sean Payton's meeting with the media this morning down in Florida.
It was interesting. I haven't seen all the quotes. I have seen a few. I'm glad that he spoke about it. You know, I think that if you go into hiding after something like that, it's not good at all. It's just going to make the controversy that much worse. There's not a lot that he can say. I mean, he says, one of the quotes I read, where he said that he was very honest to the commissioner. Clearly, the NFL commissioner thinks otherwise. He's made it clear time and time again that Sean Payton has lied. I don't know what the truth is, obviously, but it's clearly there's something going on there. And it's a bad situation. I mean, Sean Payton was wrong, and quite frankly, he's lucky he only was suspended for a year, and he's lucky he still has a job. If I were the owner of that team, I would probably fire him for what he did, not just the bounty program, but, you know, if he really was ordered to stop it, and then didn't and lied about it, you know, I don't know how you keep your job after that.
Yeah, and I don't think, frankly, many teams or players around the league are going to have a whole lot of sympathy for a team that is giving bonuses to players for trying to injure the opposition. And I realize that's gone on for a long time, but to the extent and the way they seem to phrase how these players would get extra money, it really isn't something that a lot of people are going to go out there and defend.
No, I don't think so. And I know you'll probably get a few people that say, well, okay, it goes on everywhere. That doesn't make it right.
Right.
And I think that if you are, even I think for a defensive player for a second, you know, there is a bit of a defensive versus offensive player line here.
Sure.
But a defensive player doesn't want to be targeted for injury. I keep thinking back to you know, Justin Tuck and his wars with Flozell Adams. And he never said Flozell Adams targeted him, but he thought certainly Flozell Adams had some dirty play that caused some injuries. And imagine if that had happened and it turned out that Flozell Adams got a $500 bonus for injuring Justin Tuck. I mean, people would be up in arms. Justin Tuck would be up in arms. You know, the players that took the money down there, and many of them are going to be punished, would scream bloody murder if somebody had targeted them. It's just it's wrong, it's offensive, and you know, I applaud Roger Goodell for taking this, trying to take it out of the game. And I applaud everybody, you know, like, for example, Eli Manning and Tom Coughlin, who have stood up and said, this is not football. It's just wrong.
And, you know, and quite frankly, Ralph, you know, you're talking about an extreme example in terms of targeting. But how many times have we heard defensive linemen in the locker room, if not outright say it, refer to it, how annoyed they get at some of the cut blocking schemes on these offensive linemen with, you know, with the zone running scheme and all that stuff. And they get mad when guys just go low. Imagine if these defensive linemen think somebody's purposely holding them and diving at their knees. They're not going to be too happy about that either.
No, absolutely not. They would be screaming and yelling, and you know, it wouldn't surprise me if, you know, somewhere along the line an offensive lineman was paid $100 to take a guy out at the knees. I'm sure it does go on. But again, it doesn't make it right. And I also understand, and so do you, that there's a fine line. I mean, how many times have we stood in a locker room and talked to a defensive player who says, we're going after the quarterback, we want to take him down? Well, you know they're not talking about just gently dragging him to the ground. They're talking about inflicting pain. But there is a difference when it's systematic and when a coach is standing up there, you know, not saying, take this guy out, hit him hard, make him feel it. He apparently said to them, hurt him so bad, a stretcher needs to come out onto the field and take him off to an ambulance. That's what a cart-off is. That's disturbing, and I'd be shocked if that happened very often around the NFL, at least that explicitly.
Now, I don't know about you. I would love to get your opinion. I think it makes a ton of sense for the Saints and for Sean Payton to bring in a guy like Bill Parcells for a year. He's not going to be a guy that's a long-term solution there, head coach. So, at least from Sean Payton's perspective, it assures his return in a year. Because if you bring in a younger coach, to me, Ralph, like a guy like Steve Spagnuolo, who's their defensive coordinator right now, for example, what happens if the team goes 14-2, they go to the NFC Championship game with a Super Bowl? How, after a season like that, especially after what Sean Payton's done, if he lied to the league, if he even lied to ownership or the general manager, who knows, how do you bring a guy like that back? To me, a guy like Parcells, considering his relationship with Payton, their similarities in their coaching style, how they talk to their players, it seems to me like the perfect one-year solution for the New Orleans Saints.
No, it's interesting. When you say it that way and the more people say it to me, it does make sense. At first, I thought the best move would be to promote somebody from within, promote Spagnuolo, promote Pete Carmichael, and this way you're running Sean Payton's system, his coaches playing the way he wants to play. But, you know, really, there's no guarantee that Steve Spagnuolo would coach the way Sean Payton wanted to, or that Pete Carmichael would coach the way Sean Payton wanted to. So any way you look at it, you're bringing in an outside guy. You're bringing in somebody else to coach it their way. So if you do bring in a Bill Parcells, you know it's just 1 year. You know, Steve Spagnuolo coaches for a year. You're right. What happens if he's 14-2? Parcells, you know, it's a 1 year fix. He's going to be 70 years old. So it does make a lot of sense. I don't know that it makes a lot of sense for him, which is the part that I find really strange.
Right. He's
been very sensitive over the years to the Hall of Fame.
That's
fair. And he
didn't
make it past year. Now he's going to wait 5 more years.
Yeah, that's a great point. I was looking at it from the Payton and the Saints perspective. The question, I guess, would be whether or not Parcells has enough of an itch to coach again to warrant, you know, who knows? You know, Bill Parcells is an older guy. He hasn't been in the best of health his whole life either. And, you know, not to sound grim, but to a certain extent, he's rolling the dice on that 5 years and the Hall of Fame. Let's be honest.
Absolutely. And another thing, you don't know, he wants to live 5 years. You want to be around to enjoy it. You want to be healthy to enjoy it. And not that you can't be 75 and healthy and all that, but I'm sure you don't know that he's going to get in his first year. It might take him 5 years to get in. And then he's, getting up into his 80s. So it's a roll of the dice either way. And it's a bit of a roll of the dice for the Saints, too, because keep in mind, it's now been, 6 years since Parcells coached. He's happy in retirement. I know, and he was a hard-driving, intense coach during his younger years. Will he still have that passion? I mean, could it possibly be that, if they start off 2-3, that he loses a little interest, and maybe he's not working as hard as he used to? And, again, not to criticize him, it's just that he's been retired for 6 years. And the word out of Miami wasn't exactly that he was putting in full days as the president of the Miami Dolphins. So, who knows, maybe he gets into this and realizes after a few weeks, this really wasn't what I wanted, and then where are you?
Yeah, 100%. All right, Ralph, we got some questions coming in on Twitter, Giants-specific related stuff, and I want to hit a couple of these topics with you. This one coming in from @Eddie24. What's the plan at middle linebacker? I saw you tweet about it yesterday in the morning when Jerry Reese was on SiriusXM, and he basically said, I don't know who the middle linebacker is going to be. Do you think one of these young guys currently on the roster can come back and win the spot? Are we going to see Jonathan Goff make a return? Or is it going to be somebody that's not even on the roster or has been on the roster for the last couple of years? Or are we going to see a guy like Chase Blackburn come back? What do you think?
I think everything you just mentioned is a possibility. I'm not trying to avoid the question, but when the general manager says, I don't know, and then sort of goes all over the map with his answers,
right.
He mentioned Mark Herzlich, Greg Jones, he mentioned Michael Boley as a possibility, then you have to leave everything open. And I do think, if I'm going to read his mind a little bit from that answer, that the reason his mind is open is because I think they're going to look for a middle linebacker in the draft, but it's sort of hard to predict whether you can get one when you're picking all the way down at the bottom of each round. I think he's going to consider a veteran later in free agency, the way they got Keith Bullock
right.
A couple of years ago. But, you don't know who's going to be available in June that's suddenly willing to take the minimum salary. And I think ideally, my guess is you might see both. You might have him bring in a veteran who's out there, draft somebody in the first couple of rounds, and then you've got an open competition. You throw in Herzlich, you throw in Jones. And that Boley thing is interesting because the three best linebackers last year were Boley, Kiwanuka, and Jaquan Williams.
Right.
And, Chase Blackburn played well late, certainly, but those were the three guys that were there most of the entire year, and I think had the biggest impact. Assuming Chase Blackburn and Jonathan Goff don't come back, you got to find a way to get those three guys to work together, and Boley might be the best one of those three to slide over to the middle.
Yeah, and you really stole my thunder on that, because I was going to say, in the nickel, you saw Jaquan Williams and Boley on the field. Boley had the communicator in his headset. He was the virtual middle linebacker at nickel, and now the way teams play, you're in nickel 60, 70% of the snaps anyway. Would it be that much of a stretch to have Boley move to middle linebacker in your base defense?
Exactly. I mean, we think of a middle linebacker like a big bowling ball kind of guy, right? Hard hitter is going to clog the middle the way, Michael Barrow was a few years ago, a Brian Urlacher type. It doesn't have to be that when you're playing spread offenses of today, and you think about the offenses that the Giants are going to play. Even the Redskins, who probably weren't the only spread offense in the division, or the only team that didn't have a real spread offense in the division, now you've got Robert Griffin III going there. Well, he's an extremely mobile quarterback. You don't want necessarily the big guy clogging the middle. You want faster linebackers who can chase people. And, maybe Michael Boley is more like the modern-day middle linebacker than we all think.
Yeah, and if you look at a team like the Cowboys, their middle linebacker of the future is Sean Lee. He's not a big bruising type of middle linebacker. Granted, they play the 3-4 and not the 4-3, but he is their virtual middle linebacker in that 3-4 defense. You're playing a team like the Eagles with Vic, not to mention LeSean McCoy, who they use a ton in screen passes, and they put him in patterns out of the backfield all the time. You're going to want a lot of speed at that linebacker position.
Absolutely. So I think, even though if you listen to the quote of what Jerry Reese said on Sirius Radio yesterday, he just kind of threw Boley in at the end. But at least, if nothing else, that shows that's on his mind a little bit. And, something you have to watch. If they can't draft someone and they don't find a free agent, that wouldn't shock me if that's the way it worked out at the beginning of training camp.
D. Cowan, 850, wants to know if London Fletcher you think could be an option down the line for the Giants. Obviously a tackle machine, a veteran. From all reports, he's a fantastic guy to deal with in the locker room, great locker room guy. Your thoughts on him possibly being in the mix as we move further down after the draft and free agency?
Yeah, I'd put him in the category of those veterans who, you know, like Keith Bullock a few years ago, might be available in June or July. And if he wants to play one more year, I think he's 36 or 37 now.
Yeah.
If he wants to play one more year, the Giants scouts would know better than me whether he's got that left in his tank. I think, you know, he'd be a guy that would be worth bringing in for 1 year minimum salary. You take a look at him in training camp. If he seems like he still has something, you know, maybe if nothing else, he can teach Greg Jones and Mark Herzlick about the position. You know, play for a few games and then give way to them. It's not the worst idea. You know, I'm not watching him every day. I can't tell you for sure that he's absolutely got something left in his tank. But if he does, I would think that's the kind of guy you want, a good guy in the locker room who knows it's going to be for 1 year and is not going to cause trouble when he gets here.
Now, we've seen the Giants already bring back Terrell Thomas, who's coming off that bad knee injury last year. A similar situation with Jonathan Goff. Why do you think the Giants haven't moved on him yet?
That's a really good question. Every indication I had gotten was that they were trying to move on him around the same time they were trying to move on Terrell Thomas. The only two things I could think of is, you know, one, maybe he's not as healthy as we all think he was going to be. We haven't heard from him. Obviously, Jerry Reese hasn't spoken in depth on that. He did say at the combine that Jonathan Goff was in the plans. So, you know, I assume that that was the case and that they were trying to get Jonathan Goff back. The other thing is money. You know, he's looked at the Cleveland Browns. He's obviously scoured the market. You know, you think of the big deal that Terrell Thomas got. As we found out, it was really 1 year for not a lot of money, not a lot of commitment, where he's got to sort of prove himself. If Jonathan Goff didn't want that, you know, maybe he wanted to look at the market first and see. So I can't rule him out either, but I would have thought if he was going to come back that it would have been done by now.
We are getting some questions also about the running backs. This one coming in from David Fernandez. How much do you think Darrell Scott's going to be in the mix next year, Ralph? And do you think that's going to be a deal where he's going to have to earn that in training camp?
I think you probably have to earn it in training camp. I suspect there'll be some competition, whether they bring in a veteran running back. I guess there's rumors that Brandon Jacobs could return, or they draft somebody. There'll be a fourth running back, maybe even a fifth running back in the mix. The coaches, from all that I heard from them, they like Darrell Scott. They love his speed. But the two things that bothered them, one was he wasn't as shifty as you'd like your running back. You know, it's great that he can run through the big holes in the preseason games and have straight-ahead speed, but in a real game against first-teamers, you've got to create your own space, which he didn't show a lot of in his time there that he could do. And the other thing was, he can't be a liability on the field. He had a fumble or two. He had a couple of missed blitzes or blitz pickups. So, he's not a finished product. I don't think that at the end of the year they thought he was ready to really be in a game, which is why he wasn't, but he will get a chance. He's third on the depth chart, obviously, behind Bradshaw and Ware. But with Bradshaw's iffy feet, that third guy could be pretty big. So, he'll have some competition, but I think he's going to get a real shot at being a factor in the rotation.
How many carries are you comfortable giving Ahmad Bradshaw on a game-in, game-out basis where you can keep him healthy the whole year? 12? 14?
I would go maybe a little bit more, I guess. I mean, there's not much of a difference, but the number in my head is 15.
Mm-hmm.
In some games you could push him to 20 if there's a chance where, one of the other guys is going well or you've got a lead. I would always ease back the throttle on him, and if I could get away with 10 to 12, I would. I don't know how much of a difference is there between 12 carries and 18 carries in a game. I don't know if that makes for a lot of difference on the wear and tear on his feet. But I'm concerned about it. I mean, he broke down. This is why he didn't get the big contract he wanted. He broke down for part of last year. He's tough as nails, but he's got fractures in both feet. He has ankle problems. His foot refractured, so he had to have, that kept him out last year. I would not look at him and think, boy, I can get 20 carries a game at him for 16 weeks. I would definitely want to limit that as much as possible.
Offensive line, how do you see this playing out? Right now, are you envisioning David Dio moving out to right tackle and, maybe starting Kevin Booth with Beattie staying at left tackle? How do you see this Giants offensive line with the guys on the roster now kind of pairing out over the course of the offseason to start training camp?
I think that most likely Will Beattie, assuming he's 100% after coming off his eye injury, I assume he'll go back to left tackle. I'm not so sure he's the best left tackle. I do like David Deal in that spot, but David Deal is so versatile and he's played right tackle before, I think he's much more likely to make the switch out to that spot. Obviously, you've got Snead and David Boss and two of the interior positions. The other one could be interesting. I mean, Mitch Petras played well when he was in there last year. Kevin Booth, obviously, is a big favorite of the organization. You know, I don't know whether they want him to be sort of the super sub that can play everywhere or whether they would want him in the starting lineup. So there could be some competition there. Jerry Reese the other day mentioned James Brewer as a possibility at right tackle. I think he's probably got an uphill battle. You know, he was a bit of a project, but, you know, he certainly could factor in. And I wouldn't rule out them drafting a young tackle who could compete because, you know, David Deal, I think, has 1 year on his contract left after this. Will Beattie's still a work in progress. You know, they may draft somebody and say, okay, this is our left tackle, right tackle of the future. But, you know, immediately David Deal's probably going to be the guy.
All right, final question from me, Ralph, and thanks a lot for joining us. Ralph Valchiano from the Daily News joining us on Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com. The Giants' third wide receiver, obviously Mario Manningham, has moved on to the 49ers. In terms of a type of player the Giants want to slide into that third wide receiver spot, are you looking for more of a stretch-the-field playmaker type, or would you prefer to have more of a possession receiver that's going to run a lot of those inside slants and be the guy that can move the chains a little bit?
You know, I prefer the second one you mentioned. I'm having a hard time reading them on what exactly they want because Ramses Barden and Jarrell Jernigan, the two guys who are most often mentioned as the third receiver, are completely different guys.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, and mixed into this equation is, what exactly is Victor Cruz? You know, if you think of him as the slot receiver, well, okay, then maybe Ramses Barden makes more sense as the number three. He can take over the outside role. But Victor Cruz had a lot of his big plays playing on the outside.
Yeah.
So if he's on the outside, well, then Jarrell Jernigan makes sense as the shifty little slot guy. So this is a really big puzzle and equation for Kevin Gilbride and Tom Coughlin to solve and figure out exactly what they want. I don't know whether it has more to do with Cruz and where he's suited best or the development between Barton and Jernigan. I hear from the organization better things about Jernigan in his future. There sounds sometimes to be a bit of a frustration with Barton and keeping him on the field and, you know, getting him to pick up the offense over the years. They seem to like what Jernigan did. You know, obviously he's young and has some potential too. So, you know, I guess in my head I sort of envision Nixon Cruz on the outside and Jernigan as the slot guy, but they can obviously move him around. But it's going to be an interesting battle, and that's another one. The Giants have been all over the map scouting wide receivers in the draft. I would not be surprised if they drafted a receiver in the first and second round, and maybe when they draft a receiver, I would assume they'll draft a bigger one, but maybe that will give us a clue as to who that third receiver is going to be.
Final throwaway question, Ralph. Do the Giants make a move in free agency? Not re-signing one of their own guys. I'm going to say bringing in somebody from outside the organization. Will they make another move before the draft, or are they going to wait for the draft to play out, see who they got, how they filled out their needs, and then they'll go back to free agency? How do you see that playing out?
I think they're going to wait for the draft. I think if they were going to – I mean, you might bring in a very, very, I hate to use it, a lesser free agent.
Right,
you know,
of course.
A more insignificant guy. Mm-hmm. And those guys tend to be significant sometimes, but somebody like, you know, a bottom of the roster special teamer, something like a depth player, they might bring in somebody like that. But to get a guy that, you know, you're going to look at and go, wow, he could contribute, he's significant, I think that's going to happen after the draft. It's going to be one of those things where, you know, if you don't see them find their third receiver or find their linebacker, they'll look around at the veteran market and say, okay, who can we get and who can we bring in? But, you know, my guess would be at this point, after two and a half weeks of free agency, that the draft has become their priority now.
Ralph, thank you very much. We all enjoy your work on the blue screen. Obviously, he's on Twitter and New York Daily News. All the great stuff as always, Ralph. Enjoy the offseason. I know it hasn't been crazy busy, at least from the Giants' perspective. I'm sure you've, you know, dabbled in Tebow mania a little bit. But we appreciate it, and thanks a lot.
My pleasure, John. Anytime.
All right, that's Ralph Valchiano from the New York Daily News. We thank him for joining us on Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com. Just a few minutes to go on the show. We thank you for the questions coming in on Twitter at hashtag Giants Chat. Marcus Erickson chipping in, who I consider our funniest tweeter, points out that it's 162 days, 11 hours, and 20 minutes he's counted till the start of the kickoff season, yet the show is called Big Blue Kickoff, huh? We're kicking off your morning, Marcus. We're not kicking off the season. We're starting your football morning here on Giants.com. That's what we're trying to do. But that's why I like Marcus, because of stuff like that. He's a good tweeter. Good tweeter. We're working on some other stuff over the course of the week. Michael Eisen will join us tomorrow, and we'll take your calls all show long at 201-939-4513. I'm trying to get a national guy coming on Thursday. We'll talk a little draft. Maybe, you know, we'll talk a little bit more about the Sean Payton stuff. We'll have some news of what happened at the owners' meetings by Thursday morning as well. Maybe we'll have some votes. Who knows? We could talk about some role changes that are up in the air. We'll touch on that as the week goes along as well. A lot of stuff. Busy time in the NFL, folks. It's a lot of fun. We have a couple interviews we can play back for you over the course of the week. Had a chance to talk to Justin Tuck in the locker room, Steve Weatherford when he re-signed, Dominic Hixon, Kevin Booth. We can replay those interviews over the course of the week as well. You can find the video versions on Giants.com. Make sure you check those out, too. Coming on later on today, of course, you have the Morning Blitz, which is on there already. Our good friend Dan Salamone, one of our contributors to Giants.com, kind of gives you the lay of the land of all the stories related to the Giants on the web. He gives you all the links. You can check that out. Eisen's mailbag will come your way later on today, the written version. The video version comes your way on Thursday. Make sure you check that out tomorrow. Papa's Perspective makes its return on Giants.com. Bob Papa is in the house, actually, in our other studio doing his serious NFL radio show as we do our show in here. So it's just funny to show that multiple shows coming out of the same place. Pretty cool. And then, of course, on Friday, we'll have our off-season report. And you also have an Ahmad Bradshaw top five at some point at the end of the week, too. That should be fun. And a little Giants history coming your way on the web this week. Our legacy show featuring great Giants tight end Mark Bavaro. We know Kaiser and Brooklyn will certainly be tuning into that. Mark Bavaro, Kaiser and Brooklyn's favorite Giant of all time. I think he might be in love with him, actually. 201-939-4513. Everybody, thanks for joining us on Giants.com. Big Blue Kickoff Live comes your way every morning from 10 a.m. to 10:30. We thank you for joining us. We'll see you next time right here on Giants.com.